Daily Show writer Kevin Blair says, "You, the people, have made a terrible mistake putting your faith in a four-page document written by farmers, scrawled on animal skin, disseminated more than two centuries ago, and not for nothing scribbled by hand with the quill of a goose." So he has decided to set matters right by rewriting the Constitution. His book, Me the People, One Man's Selfless Quest to Rewrite the Constitution of the United States of America, is published by Random House, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Kevin Blair to our show today. Hello.
Oh, it's my honor to be here. And selfless is the key word there. I've done it only on behalf of America.
Of course, and you don't want to sell books. You're not the only one to think that the Constitution needs rewriting. There was an op-ed in the New York Times recently that elicited, I don't know if you saw them, the letters yesterday in which everybody said, well, you know, the Constitution isn't as good as it can be, but in the current political climate, a new Constitution would almost surely turn out worse.
That's well, I think I might be living proof. But nonetheless, it's historical as much as it is contemporary, this need to rewrite the Constitution, because we are all following in the footsteps of Thomas Jefferson himself, who said, oh, a long time ago, that every constitution naturally expires after 19 years. So quite frankly, I should have been doing this two centuries ago. I feel bad I'm only getting into it now. It should have been done 11 times. But you're right. Others have, not only letters to the editor, as it were, but no less than Justice Ginsburg herself in Egypt a couple of months ago said that if she were redesigning a democracy right now, she would actually not use the American Constitution as a model.
Well, amendments are supposed to correct the mistakes of the past. Some of them have.
Some of them have, although even James Madison in his later years was surprised at how few amendments that had been made. The founders believed that they were setting up something that might actually, I mean, by way of amendment, in Thomas Jefferson's words, be improved more often than it is. So I thought, why not? If we're so slow to the switch here, why don't I go ahead and do a full-scale page one rewrite and see if I can bring a little bit of illumination, perhaps a little bit of light rather than heat to the Constitution, since we know, as you've suggested, that a lot of people do cite it, they do have opinions about it, and they have real thoughts about perhaps changes that they would make if they had their choice.
And two people can cite the Constitution and come to two very different results.
And the reason for that is because very few of us remember even having read the Constitution. We do hear about the Constitution a lot. We even say things like, well, the Constitution says. But unfortunately, only one in four Americans ever even remembers having read the Constitution. And let's be honest, when they did, it was probably an assignment in high school or college. And so why not do something that, in fact, brings people with some amusement back to the Constitution, the source code, as it were?
You begin your book with the story of the Liberty Bell being buried in manure by the revolutionaries to protect it from the Redcoats.
Indeed.
How is that relevant to the work you're undertaking here? And did that really happen?
It did really happen.
Because
in fact,
not all the things you say here did happen.
Oh, well, you'll find.
There's a certain amount of truthiness.
I lead you
here.
Down a trail. There's a little bit of truthiness, but I don't make things up out of whole cloth. That, in fact, did happen, or at least it is a story that is presumed to be true. I suppose there's no eyewitnesses still around. But yes, they thought they heard that the Liberty Bell might be stolen to use for British munitions or for other metalwork. And they thought, what's the best thing we can do to save something that we truly care about? And that would be, in this particular instance, to hide it. And where did they hide it? Under a pile of horse manure. So the lesson is that it's okay to take something we care about and do something that others might think is a little bit disrespectful, but actually, on the contrary, the whole point is to bring a little more attention and a little more reverence to it.
Well, Jefferson called the framers an assembly of demigods, but you say that they're more like a confederacy of dunces, a combative group of exhausted, drunken, broke, petty, partisan, scheming, squabbling, bloviating, backstabbing, grandstanding delegates, which sound just like the current Congress.
from your lips to their ears. We all contain multitudes. I was saying they're both an assembly of demigods, and in fact, as we all are, flawed people. We're all in our worst days, Duncey. And in fact, the founders have suggested that what they've done at the Constitutional Convention needed improvement. Washington famously said he wished it had been more perfect. Franklin said he stomached it only with all its faults. So they too knew that they were working with something. And you know, through fits and starts, through a very long, very hot, very humid summer, where they were quite frankly at each other's throats, lost each other's pace and patience, they knew that what they came up with was just the latest version when they could get out of town.
Which you also say is rife with grammatical, syntactical, and stylistic errors, from errant commas and typos to random capitalization. occasional smudge.
Why do you think there was a smudge that even, yes, that's true. There is a smudge in that.
Because they were so soused, do you think?
Maybe. You know, someone ate a hamburger and they got a little too much grease on their fingers. I'm not sure exactly what happened to get that smudge there, but there is a smudge. And smarter, more constitutionally expertised scholars than I have suggested that that smudge may in fact be a comma, and we're not sure. And the comma may in fact change the clause, which may in fact affect when and how and under what circumstances the government can do no less than seize your house under eminent domain. So it's kind of a fascinating thing if in fact that rogue smudge is actually a comma.
Maybe we should have had John Hancock write out the Constitution. He did the Declaration of Independence. We love his handwriting.
We do love
he
his handwriting.
He got an insurance company out of it.
In fact, he did.
Who wrote out the Constitution? Do we know?
Well, we do. There's a penman who was given $30 to write it the night before they read it aloud. His name's Jacob Shallis, and quite frankly, very few people know the name because, you know, I make comic hay of it and say, well, that's because they were trying to have a scapegoat when they wrote the thing. But John Hancock, you say he does have great penmanship, as he does. But had he written the Constitution, I believe that would be about 19 pages rather than four because he's got a garish hand.
Yeah.
It's very big, very bold. But nonetheless, you're right. We would have been able to read it more clearly.
The Constitution is often cited as sacrosanct, mm-hmm. but it hasn't been treated that way over the years. In fact, you say it's un-American to not violate the Constitution, and you give a number of examples.
The most prominent of which, I would say, is America itself. And as we know, America would not be America without the Louisiana Purchase. And Thomas Jefferson, again, I keep coming back to him, did something he said was outside the reins of the Constitution, extra constitutional, but he did it for the good of the country. So when I say that, what I really mean to say is that the Constitution was designed to be obeyed, but to be tested, to find out what it allows. And quite frankly, that's what he was doing. He thought he was doing for the good of the country to make America what we know it today, so that the eastern banks aren't the Mississippi.
Well, even before that, we had the Alien and Sedition Acts.
Indeed.
Controversial. Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus later.
Right.
The rounding up of and internment of Japanese Americans, start of World War II, the McCarthy era trials, wiretapping throughout the 20th century.
The best thing that the Constitution does for us is that it helps us course correct when we find ourselves going extra constitutional. We find other ways to say, well, wait a minute, is this what was really intended? And that's why some people say the articles are the most important part. Others say the amendments are the most important part because we have made slight shifts as we go forward in the last
slavery was instituted by the Constitution.
Precisely.
You say George W. Bush called the Constitution a goddamn piece of paper.
It's an apocryphal story.
Yeah, that's a bit of truthiness?
That's a bit of truthiness, but not just truthiness because I point out that it actually never happened. In fact, I give him the credit where credit is due and say that was a story that was thrown his way, but it actually never happened.
And you also claim that it's an indisputable fact that George Washington was a British spy.
Oh, indeed. Well, I won't say whether or not that was a scurrilous cousin of some of his enemies that spread that rumor. But I adopt it for a bit in my book to point out that you never know who you're dealing with, certainly. But no, he was not a British spy.
Obviously. In the course of your research, you met with Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia to discuss your book. What happened?
I was honored by it. He agreed to meet with me. Now, I should take a step back and say, of course, naturally, I would want to meet with him because, after all, I thought, who among all the people on the planet, let alone the country, would be most amenable to a page one rewrite of the Constitution? And certainly that would be the man who has devoted his entire life both directly and politically to defend every clause and section of it. And in fact, yes, he agreed to meet with me. I found him engaging and charismatic, and he enjoyed the premise. But right up until the point where I told him, to his face, toe-to-toe, face-to-face, fork-to-fork, as we said at the over a salad, that I was going to make a few changes to the judicial branch. and he knew where I was headed, and he said, with a little glare in his eye, don't you dare take away lifetime tenure for Supreme Court justices. Of course, that was my intention. But then he added, and if you do, at least grandfather me in. So he had a sense of humor about it, but he in fact was very charming.
Well, many of his critics claim that Scalia is very much a judicial activist, not a purist. But James Madison wanted no federal courts, right?
He certainly, through the ratification debates, as I understand it, he actually tried to limit, he tried to downplay that there would be many courts whatsoever. And so it is kind of an interesting fact of history that in many people's eyes, over the last 200 years, courts have become not only powerful, but perhaps the most powerful branch of government, depending on your interpretation of it.
You talk about how the First Amendment disappointed you personally after September 11th. George W. Bush called the terrorists cowards. Your boss at the time, Bill Maher, he had a show called Politically Incorrect then.
Was a few days after 9/11.
He said that they were anything but, that it was the Americans lobbing missiles from 2,000 miles away who were cowards, and we know what happened. He wound up losing his job. What was your reaction to what he said and the criticism he got?
I suggest in the book that it felt like a First Amendment issue, although technically it's not, because he said something on a commercial broadcast, and ultimately those commercial broadcasters decided many months later, frankly, that relationship had ended.
I could say things on this show that would get me fired, I'm pretty sure.
Right, precisely. So we know that the First Amendment is about what government can do. So I was merely saying, as a young 20-something at the time, it felt like, wait a minute, where are my First Amendment rights? And, you know, and in looking into it, you realize that their First Amendment is very specific about what it can be.
Well, have things gotten worse for Bill Maher since? He is constantly being criticized for being misogynistic, and he just bought a piece of the New York Mets.
So is that what you're suggesting, things have gone bad for him?
I'm worried for him.
You're worried things have gone poorly for him because he's now a co-owner of the Mets. I would argue that if he were in the room right now, he'd say, how dare you, j'accuse. That's not I think he's pleased with his purchase.
You write that the shooting of Gabby Giffords, who's a friend of yours, changed your thoughts about gun control.
Well, it seemed inevitably that it would, although not as much as you might expect. I have been, of course, a supporter of gun rights, as has she her entire life. But I do take the moment to suggest, and this is an interesting facet of the Second Amendment, that punctuation is actually a key element in the interpretation of the Second Amendment, whether or not an individual has a right to bear arms or it's merely a militia. And I, of course, address that issue and say that's the discussion that's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court and recently. I merely suggest that if punctuation is really the problem, it might be the solution here too, and that if I can do anything to make sure that at least, you know, people who would do ill will and do crazy things with guns, and for that matter, you know, shoot innocent people, if there's anything I can do with punctuation to help out, well, then I'll add as much punctuation in that amendment as possible.
Well, there was a time when the Constitution was a model for other constitutions. That's no longer the case. People no longer see it as a good one. Have you looked at some other constitution? For example, what about the Confederate states? Did they have a good constitution? Forgetting slavery thing.
As you know, this was actually not our first constitution. As you know, we had the Articles of Confederation. That was deemed
they weren't
to be
working well.
They weren't working well. It was a League of Friendship rather than Assembly of Real States, rather than a nation. We couldn't really manage an army. We couldn't pay our debts. So our American Constitution is actually our second constitution. But I think you are also suggesting that you're right. Few democracies now look to the American Constitution as an inspiration. Foreign countries, for example. The statistic there is that 20 years ago, of the 170 countries that existed, 160 of them actually based their constitution, at least in part, on the American Constitution. Now, few fledgling democracies actually do so.
We have very little time, but if there's one thing that you really could do to change the Constitution, funny or otherwise, what would it be?
Well, I think we can all agree that the preamble should really rhyme.
Governor Morris's.
Exactly. Governor Morris is he was a man who was devoted to poetry in life. Many appetites, that gentleman, in wine and women. And I thought at the very least he might add a rhyming couplet really to grab us by the scruff of the neck and say, pay attention.
Kevin Blyer is an Emmy Award winning writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's won multiple Emmy Awards. And he will be speaking with John Oliver, also of that show, tonight at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. I'm pretty sure that you'll be signing books as well.
I will be signing as many books as possible, yes.
And the book is
like
Me,
John
the
Hancock.
People, One Man's Selfless Quest to Rewrite the Constitution of the United States of America. It's published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us
today.
My
pleasure to be here. Now let's go ratify this thing.